Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in Roberts against the United States J.C.'s. I think you may proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court. At issue today are two conflicting claims. On one hand, the states that it can prohibit sex discrimination in certain commercial associations, and on the other, the United States J.C.'s that a constitutionally protected freedom of association permits it to engage in precisely that conduct. In order to understand those claims, it's necessary that the facts of this case be made clear, and I'd like to take a few minutes to do just that. What the J.C.'s does and what it offers and how it treats its members are essential to an understanding of this case. What the organization does is offer leadership training and leadership skills and the opportunity to obtain those skills and obtain that training to certain individuals. It offers this training and these opportunities in three types of programs. The first type of program is the program in which the J.C.'s train an individual to better himself or herself. Such programs would be learning how to be a better speaker. A second type of program is a program that they call management skills. That indicates that the J.C.'s train people to run meetings, to run programs. The third type of program that the J.C.'s runs and that it provides opportunities for leadership training in are programs which merge those first two types of skills but which work toward the betterment of the community so that, for example, an individual J.C. learns these individual skills, learns how to run a program, and then runs a program for the betterment of their community. These programs are made available through some 7,000 local chapters by a national organization, and they're run on a local basis in local communities. The unfortunate part from the state's point of view about these programs is that women have admission to the leadership training opportunities that are provided, but they're on a limited basis. What women cannot do in these organizations is that they cannot vote, they cannot hold office, and they cannot receive any of the awards that the J.C.'s give for performance in these programs. Thus, what happens is that J.C.'s can buy part of this program, female J.C.'s can buy part of this program, but they can't buy all of it. Now, the J.C.'s have pictured themselves as a private membership organization, and I think it's essential to understand that they really operate the way a business operates. For example, their national headquarters in Tulsa, Oklahoma, have a marketing department, a department that's designed to shape and promote the J.C. image. In 1980, this had 40 employees, and it had a budget of some $2 million. In addition to that, they have a membership development department that creates these programs that I referred to you above. In the 1980 annual report, the J.C.'s referred to these programs as some among the most useful that they have in getting career opportunities and new jobs. Another indication of the business aspect of this community, of this organization, is the way in which the J.C.'s recruit. For example, in 1980, they had a membership of some 295,000 members. 120,000 to 130,000 of those people had been recruited the previous year.
How does that bear on any of the issues in this case?
I think, Mr. Chief Justice,
how they get their members.
I think what it shows is that it operates the way a business operates. Businesses go out and seek customers. They go out on a continuous basis to look for people to buy their products. That's precisely what the United States JCs does in this case. They're continually looking for new people to bring into their organization.
That's true of social fraternities, too. Fraternities are constantly rushing. They want a new pledge crop every year. Does that make them a business organization?
No, I don't think it does. I think that in a fraternity, for example, Justice Rehnquist, you have a situation in which there are ties that bind the members, which are significantly different than the ties that bind the people in the JCs.
Well, there may be those differences, but I think one of them is not a desire. There is not a difference between their desire for new members at frequent intervals.
Well, I bring that point out to show that that's one of the aspects of their business. I think some clubs, for example, some private social clubs, don't show this rush that fraternities do. They're very discreet and private. There's no recruiting that goes on. You have to know somebody to belong. So I think that if we're weighing the JCs on the spectrum of where they belong, the fact that they go out and seek these people actively shows that they're more like a business and they work more like a business than they do like a private social club.
An association of this kind has one thing in common with a fraternity that was just mentioned, in that the fraternity has access to these people for about 4 years of undergraduate work and perhaps a little longer. And you have an age limit here. Is that not so?
Yes, that's correct.
And what is that age limit?
The JC's programs are offered to people between the ages of 18 and 35.
Does that discriminate against older people?
It certainly does, but in the state of Minnesota, that's not illegal. There's no provision against age discrimination in the state. It is a form of discrimination. It is a discriminatory judgment that they make.
With that turnover...
Pardon me?
With that age limit, there's a very substantial turnover in membership, is there not?
I don't know if the record indicates quite what their turnover is, Mr.
Chief
Justice.
You don't need to know what the record shows. You just need to look at the numbers. At age 35 or 36... every year, quite a few of them are going out, aren't they?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, then in order to maintain an organization, they've got to have a program at the bottom side to bring new ones in, don't they?
No question about that.
What's remarkable about that?
There's nothing remarkable about it, but the reason I bring the point up is...
Why does that make it a business?
Pardon?
Why does that make it a business?
It's a business-like aspect to it. In other words, I'm sure that there are some clubs that we would all agree would be private that don't engage in this particular type of recruiting, and they lose members quite regularly. I don't know if they replace them on the same basis. I think we could hypothesize that they don't. But this club recruits aggressively. It refers to its new members as customers. It solicits them in a way that businesses solicit. It goes out into the marketplace and looks for these people.
It recruits women too, doesn't it?
Pardon me?
It recruits women too, doesn't it?
The Minneapolis and St. Paul chapters, in contravention of the National Charter, recruited women. I don't think that the National JCs recruits women.
I thought you, in describing the JCs at the outset, you said that women can be limited members.
The JCs, Justice White, have several categories of members. The two that are important are, for this case, our individual member, which is limited to men between the ages of 18 and 35, and associate members, which is a category of membership that women can have.
Don't they recruit for them?
I don't believe that they do.
Strange, isn't it? They must have to pay, don't they?
Yes, they have to pay if they come in.
I would think they'd be recruiting them all the time.
Again, I hate to fall back on what the record says, but the evidence in our record consisted of what the Minneapolis and St. Paul chapters did, and it consists of a large number of materials about how the national chapter operates. The Minneapolis and St. Paul chapters recruited aggressively for women because, of course, they treated them equally.
As members.
As individual members. But there's nothing in there in the record that shows how the associate...
Regardless of how sensible it might be.
That's correct.
Would you agree that the core issue in this case is not whether this is a good idea to include or exclude women, but whether it is required as a matter of law? Is that the issue of this case?
I'd agree with the first half of that formulation.
And what about
whether
the second half?
Whether it's a good idea or not makes no difference to this court. I think that the issue before this court is whether the JCs have a constitutionally protected right to evade what is an otherwise valid state law.
Or whether people who are not members have a statutorily guaranteed right to come in.
Yes, in Minnesota they do.
Then why is the good sense of it relevant one way or the other?
I don't think that the good sense of it is particularly relevant. I agreed with your first part of the question, that the good sense of it makes no difference here. It's simply a question of constitutional and statutory.
Now, these two organizations in the two cities thought it was a good idea.
Yes, they did.
That has nothing to do, has it, with whether with the legal question that's presented here.
No, that only served as the petri dish upon which this all grew. It sprung from this particular way in which the JCs treated their female members. The JCs grounds...
Mr. Kirk, would the statute in your state be applied to prevent a group of blacks from forming an all-black club to advocate causes of interest to black citizens and compel that group to admit whites?
I think, Justice O'Connor, it would depend on several things. There's a statutory analysis that you'd have to make, and I think there's a constitutional analysis that you'd have to make.
If it were found to be as much of a public accommodation as the JCs, then do you think that there would be a First Amendment right of that black association that would override any state regulation?
If the admission of whites to this black institution in your hypothetical could be shown to interfere with some constitutionally protected freedom, let's say a constitutionally protected right to hold a belief or to advocate a belief, then the state of Minnesota, I think, would have trouble requiring through its public accommodations law that those
Does
people
the
be
First used. Amendment incorporate a right to advocate causes relating just to young men?
It probably does, Justice O'Connor, but that freedom is not interfered with in this particular case. The regulation that the state of Minnesota imposes upon the JCs, which requires them to admit women, would not have the effect of interfering with any position that the JCs takes on these issues that purportedly concern young men. And I can tell you why that's so.
I'm sure you tried to tell Judge Arnold, but he didn't agree with you.
That's correct.
Yeah.
What if there were in Minneapolis an Iranian society devoted to the propagation of Iranian interests, and one of their big positions was that Iraq is all bad, and then the Supreme Court of Minnesota comes along and says, well, these Iraqi people that wanted to belong to the Iranian society are free to join it under our public accommodations law. You have to let them. And then the state tries to defend on a constitutional basis and says, well, look, there's no reason in the world why the Iranian society can't keep on advocating just what it always did, that Iraq is all bad. And their answer, I suppose, would be, if you admit enough Iraqis into the Iranian society, they're going to quite substantially change the purposes of the organization. Now,
yes,
isn't the same foreseeable?
No, it is not. It's not foreseeable at all, because the assumption in your hypothetical, probably quite an accurate one, is that the Iraqis would have a different point of view on that war than the Iranians. I think that the difference between the two cases here is that the issues that the JCs purportedly calls men's issues are not issues on which sex determines your point of view, much the way, or to the contrary, of what happens in the Iran-Iraq situation. In addition to that, the JCs hold up their membership to no political litmus test, the way the Iraq-Iran hypothetical would. Men can hold these divergent views. They can hold...
These are factual assertions about the character of this organization. Are we supposed to take your word for it, or how are these things supposed to be sorted out?
I think the record shows, Justice White, that...
Well, apparently it didn't, or the Court of Appeals would have believed you.
Well, The record shows that the admissions practices of the JCs don't entail any sort of agreement with a particular issue.
Well, at least the Court of Appeals thought there was something in the notion that the JCs were giving a male point of view.
Well, I think what the
and
court
that it was distinguishable enough that the state couldn't force them to take in women.
I think that the Court of Appeals made the erroneous assumption that because men uttered something, that was a man's point of view, or more, to put it another way, that because men uttered it, men would hold this point of view and women wouldn't. But there is nothing in the record that shows that. And quite to the contrary, what the record shows is that the JCs don't require any particular political ideology. A striking fact, I think, is that they don't even require you to pass the test if you come in with respect to the very issue that's here.
Going back to Justice O'Connor's question, what if the blacks decided that we should have our own JC because we ought to really promote black business participation in black businesses and things like that? So they had an absolute carbon copy, so to speak, of the JCs. But they were all limited to black membership. They did exactly the same thing. Took great part in community work, trained leadership, etc.
If there's absolutely no difference between the organization in your hypothetical and the organization here, then I would say that they could not do that.
Well, the difference is that they're all black instead of
that would make black. No difference for purposes of this application of this statute.
You mean under the Minnesota Supreme Court view of the matter and your view of the matter?
That's correct.
But under the Court of Appeals view, they could do that, couldn't they?
That's correct. But if we accepted the Court of Appeals view, I guess we wouldn't be here.
Mm-hmm.
We disagree with them both on the law and on the facts.
Is that because you're elevating the type of speech involved to different levels of protection? The type of advocacy involved? Is it more important in one case than another? Are you saying that there can be no First Amendment advocacy right on allegedly concerns of only male citizens?
I'm looking at that question, Justice O'Connor, from two points of view. First, from a factual point of view. And I think that the factual point of view is illustrated by Justice Rehnquist's observations. There's a factual difference between the Iranian and Iraqi points of view on this particular war. In this case, what we disagree with is that the entrance of women into the JCs will result in any difference of opinion on the particular issues that the JCs speaks on. There simply is no basis for that.
Well, what if the JCs had taken a position that the Equal Rights Amendment is bad and that women getting into the job market is a bad development? Now, if they had taken those two positions, which I am aware they have not, would that change your answer to any of the Justice O'Connor's questions?
I think what it would change would be the nature of the regulation that the state could impose upon them. It couldn't force them to take into their organization people who disagreed with that particular point of view, because that would then be content regulation. We'd be regulating the content of the speech or the content of their beliefs.
But couldn't just flatly ban women, is that right?
That's correct. It's obvious that there are some women who probably agree with that point of view.
Yes.
Government limited to regulating only non-speech activities of an organization?
For purposes of the First Amendment and for purposes of analyzing this case as the jurisprudence of this court has progressed this far, the answer is probably yes. There's two other areas.
Well, does that mean if an organization did have both social non-speech activities that it performed and certain advocacy functions that it performed, that the state could regulate just the social non-speech activities within that organization?
It could certainly do that, yes.
Is that the effect of your state's law?
In this particular case, it is, yes, because there's no regulation of content-based speech here. What I was going to suggest is that the First Amendment, while it protects not only content-based speech, it also protects certain private, intimate gatherings. I think that as an extension of that, there is probably some place in the concept of liberty, the notion that the government shouldn't regulate certain types of behavior that aren't, while not intimate, are nonetheless personal. So, for example, the government shouldn't be telling people who they have to go on picnics with. On none of those three bases, the content-based, the privacy-based, or this substantive due process-based, do the JCs fit in, because the relationships that the people have here are simply too impersonal and too commercial to be accorded any of those types of protection.
What about the occasion of voting, for instance, in the organization on what political positions the organization will take? Is that protected activity?
Not in this particular instance, no. Because voting is part of what you do as a JC. You take positions on issues, you elect officers. The election of officers is a reflection of how you're trained and how you're viewed. So I would say that the First Amendment doesn't prohibit the state from regulating the voting in the JCs.
And the organization never takes a vote on what positions to espouse for political or advocacy purposes?
It does. The JCs about once a year issue what they call external policy statements. And they're three or four in number, and they appear in the front of their annual report each year. And they are positions on various political issues. The vote on those comes up through the states, through their delegates to the annual convention, and is voted on by their executive committee and their executive board of directors. So through a process of representation and a process of distilled voting, the organization issues those statements. But what I'm saying here is that the requirement that women get into this organization, the requirement that the state puts on them through its public accommodation statute, wouldn't affect the positions that the JCs takes on those particular issues. Because
Council,
there's no sex-based link between the issues.
Council,
yes, sir.
You refer frequently to the fact that the JC is a business or a commercial organization. You've touched on a couple of points that perhaps support that view. I'll ask you a question or two, and then I'd like to hear you itemize A, B, C, D, the characteristics that make this a business. I suppose these chapters are nonprofit corporations. Are they incorporated?
It's incorporated.
They are incorporated.
Yes, it's a Missouri corporation.
Right. Do they pay any income taxes?
What is a Missouri corporation? The international or the chapters?
The national, just
the national.
Yes.
What are the chapters? Are they incorporated?
I don't know the answer to that. I don't think that they are. I think that they could be viewed as you would view a franchise, various franchises, without the corporate aspect of it.
Excuse me, I turn you back to Justice.
Let's see, I asked you whether or not they filed income tax returns.
I don't know. I suspect that the national files income tax returns. I would doubt that the local chapters file income tax returns.
Do they? I'm sure they pay no dividends. You said
no.
They were. They solicit
not,
numbers.
Not the monetary type.
Right. Do they advertise in the newspapers and magazines for members? Radio or television for members?
I think that they might. I think that some of
the local chapters might. Does the record show whether or not they do?
I don't know.
You don't know. Well, you say they buy members. Just like buying a products in a supermarket? What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that is that...
You use the term buy.
Yes. What I mean by that is this. After you're recruited, or if you learn about the JCs through the recruitment that they do, and they do recruit through the efforts of their members and through letters to corporations, through letters to businesses seeking members.
And what do they pay? In other words, if you buy, you pay for it.
They pay a fee, a membership fee, and that fee buys them the right to be a member in the organization and to receive the training and the benefits that the organization has.
They're selling the training.
They market and sell that training, the JCs does.
Do they publish any annual reports showing profit and loss?
Yes, they do.
Are those in the record?
Exhibit 20 Exhibit 20, Your Honor.
Exhibit 20.
Is one of their...
an annual report that's sort of like a church report or a business report, or how would you characterize that?
I would characterize it as an annual report that a business puts out. It has all the same items in there that many corporate reports have.
What other characteristics make these entities businesses rather than voluntary associations?
Well, I think that what characterizes this as a business as opposed to a voluntary association or a private membership club is the commercial nature of the transaction that's involved. The ties that bring people to this are the desire to buy something for a price, to get some training, to participate in this.
But churches train people for religion, and all sorts of organizations train for civic participation, Kiwanis, Rotary, Lions, Masons, whatever. Is the training factor alone dispositive in your view?
I don't think any one factor is dispositive.
Well, aside from training, what else?
Mr. Barco, if I may interrupt, you say one factor isn't dispositive. I think the Minnesota Supreme Court said there was just one factor it relied on, was the public sale of memberships to anybody who would pay the price.
And what I'm trying
that's the whole basis for their finding.
What I'm trying to describe are the various aspects of that offering to the public.
But they didn't rely on anything, as I read their opinion, for the business holding, except the fact of the public sale of memberships to anybody who was 18 to 35, male, and would pay the price.
But every private club requires dues. Often they require the payment of an initiation fee.
Yes, but this organization doesn't make its money solely off of dues. If you look at their annual report for 1980, I believe that their budget was $4.2 million, and only 2.6 of that came from dues. The rest of that money came from other sources, sales of merchandise, sales of membership lists, advertising in a magazine that they published. And Justice Stevens, the Minnesota Supreme Court did say it was a business and it offered its goods and services to the public, but when it did, it looked at an extensive record which shows just how similar to a business this organization is, viewing its members as customers, selling and advertising the way a business would.
I understand, but the principal point they relied on, and they've made other findings too, but on the business issue, the thing they stressed was simply that they just sold these memberships like anybody who wants to buy them can have one.
Yes, underlying that is the fact that what gets you into the JCs is your ability to spend the money to do it, in the same way that your ability to purchase goods at a department store is based upon on the dollars that you have in your pocket.
Different in what respect from the Kiwanis, the Rotary, and 29 other luncheon clubs?
Well, one thing that is...
That purchase the membership in your terms for X dollars and pay so much every time they attend a luncheon, isn't that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Now, in these clubs that Justice Powell and others have referred to, very frequently they take one lawyer, one doctor, one dentist, one hairdresser, perhaps. And the purpose of that, can't be much doubt about it, to promote business for the doctor, the lawyer, the banker, whoever. Now, why is the Kiwanis Club or the Rotary Club any different from the Junior Chamber of Commerce?
One of the problems with this case is that there's so much evidence about the JACs and so little about precisely these clubs that you've described. And my suspicion is that the difference between the JACs and these clubs is that there is some degree of selectivity, something other than the ability to spend
selectivity
money.
Selectivity in one sense, that it's just one lawyer, so that he has a monopoly or a potential monopoly on that incoming business.
But if there's a privacy aspect that has to be protected here, it's protected because of selectivity. It's because this organization is more like the picnic among friends or the private club in which friendship or status gets you in. That simply isn't here true with respect to the JCs. Anybody can get in.
At least they assert that they're selective and that they want only males between the age of 18 and 36 or something like that.
That's correct. But by the same token, that simply is too big a pool to say because they exclude women, they're not selective.
Who says it's too big a pool?
The composition of the pool.
What authority says that's too big a pool in your terms?
It's too public a pool. There's the distinction between men and women is simply too large a distinction to claim that if we keep women out, we're not offering this to the public. I think there's cases distinguishing the private club exemption under Title II in which football as a sport was offered only to youth, a far narrower field than we have here, in which the court held that that was a public offering because it was offered to such a big group of people. I'd like to reserve whatever.
What about the Girl Scouts now in Minnesota? Are they going to have to be a public accommodation and admit boys, do you suppose? Because there may be an aggressive marketing between certain ages of members.
If the Girl Scouts operate in the same fashion that the JCs operate in, they would probably be considered a public accommodation for purposes of the Minnesota Human Rights Act. That's correct.
Well, do you? The district court said that even if the JCs are interested in promoting only women's, only men's point of view, that the state interest is compelling and overrides that associational freedom.
Yes.
Do you agree with that?
Yes.
You think it's just like a hotel?
I see very little difference between what the JCs do and how they operate and being able to go into a hotel with a dollar and get a room or a meal.
Where can you go into a hotel and get a room for a dollar?
You know, speak up.
Not in this town, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time if the court has no further questions.
Mr. Hall.
Thank you. If the court please. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, our concerns in this case have been pretty much the same as those expressed by the court here. The United States JCs is not a business. It's a membership organization substantially similar to hundreds of others in this country, Kiwanis, Lions, and others. To be specific to some of the questions answered, the JCs is a tax-exempt, nonprofit Missouri corporation. All of the state organizations are likewise tax-exempt corporations, as are the local organizations, and they are all tax-exempt as 501c4 organizations or civic leagues, and they are granted exemption pursuant to a published ruling under that category some many years ago by the Internal Revenue Service. This organization has existed since 1920 and is essentially the same today as it was then, in the sense that its sole purpose is to promote the interest of men. It's a young man's organization. Its purpose is to essentially to assist young men in their development by means of community service.
Isn't it the young businessmen?
No. It's not young businessmen, it's any young men.
Any young men. Young
any
preachers? Young,
man,
young preachers? Anybody?
Yes, right. Any young man between
school
the
teachers?
Ages of
18,
big pardon.
Young school teachers?
Young school teachers, young doctors, young lawyers, young preachers, anyone who wants the organization can join and receive the benefits. The essential objective of the organization is to develop young men through participation in community projects. These projects vary by the thousands. They are essentially developed by the local organization itself. The national organization does develop programs, but essentially most of the programs are developed locally.
Mr. Hall, can you identify any of those programs in which the sex of the participant supporting it would intend to make him either support or oppose the program?
I can't think of any program that would. I cannot. I think where the problem comes in, the statement has been made that if women are admitted, it won't really change the organization or its views.
Well, but presumably it would change the organization because they'd have women instead of just men. But would it change any of the programs that they've been engaged in since 1920?
It could very well. The programs are, in terms of local programs, are by the thousands. I don't think the programs would change so much as it would the interest advanced. The interest advanced by the organization is that of young men. And presumably any organization which admits women as voting members, in due time, it's...
But which of the programs advances the interests of young men without equally advancing the interests of young women who might also be executives?
As I said earlier, I don't know of any external program in that sense. The program which...
How about any internal objective of the organization?
It would indeed change the internal because the internal programs are directed to the self-improvement of just young men.
Of course, the word men, I guess, got in the statement of purposes back in 1920, didn't it?
That's right.
When the word men was often used to cover both sexes.
And it has, and although the organization has voted three times on this question, the membership has still indicated they desire the organization to continue as an organization to advance the interests of young men.
You say it changes the organization, but how would it change it? Does the record have some explanation in it by the national organization, by its officers, as to why they confine their membership to men?
Yes.
Other than we just like men better than women.
Of the majority of they voted three times, and of course the majority voted all three times, and the reasons, of course, could be varied as there are people voting, but essentially the thrust has always been that the young men want an organization which promotes the interests of young men. Women have organizations.
Well, what interests are there of young men that would be frustrated by having women members?
I think the desire of young men simply to have an organization that they entirely run and promote solely their interest.
So that's really sort of a club sort of a rationale, a privacy rationale, rather than a First Amendment rationale, isn't it?
No, the First Amendment, as we understand it, would protect the interest of any group to who desires to meet and associate.
Whether it was communicating anything distinctive or not.
In this organization, we would advance that, but in this case, it's more than that. In this case,
I don't know that you. I thought you answered Justice Stevens that you don't know of anything that would be different externally. All of its communications would be the same, wouldn't it?
No, its communications would not.
What would happen?
Well, as pointed out earlier, in the number of matters which the organization votes on, not only nationally, but locally, each year, number in the hundreds. The national itself takes a vote each year on various issues, but all the 6,000 organizations also, from time to time, take public positions on issues of local community
value. Can you name me one position that applies only to men?
Beg pardon.
One position that they have taken that applies only to men.
I can't think of a public commitment issue which is applied only to men, but I can conceive that the organization itself, if they take a vote on ERA or the draft or abortion or any of those sensitive issues, they could very well take a different position. I think it's not rational.
Have they done so up to date?
To my knowledge, they have not taken a vote on those sensitive issues, but they certainly have
the
a
only,
right to.
The only position they've taken is they don't have any interest in women.
No, I think the interest is that they have an interest.
Have they taken that vote or not?
Beg pardon?
They haven't taken that vote, have they?
About an interest in women?
Yeah.
To my knowledge, they have not.
Yes.
Mr. But Hall, would you respond to the view of the state that this is a business?
Yes, I will.
I think that's an important question, since apparently that was a basic
yes.
decision on which the state...
It is our position that the JCs is not a business. It's a bona fide membership organization like the thousands of others. Its members elect its officers, control its affairs, determine its course of action, make up its budget, determine exactly where it will go. It is also...
Everything you've said so far could apply to a business. What about the concept of selling membership?
There is no... Well, it does not sell memberships. It recruits memberships in the sense that any membership organization...
Yes.
It no more sells memberships than the Rotary or Kiwanis or any other women's organization, Junior League or any other, sells memberships. All of those organizations recruit new people, and they issue members in return for dues. The JCs does exactly the same thing.
There's some organizations that vote people in. Do you vote them in there, or do they just, you pay your dues and you come in?
That's up to pretty much to the local chapter itself. Age 18 to 35 or eligible, how that local chapter would go about it would be pretty much left up to the local chapter
itself.
So
anybody can walk in off the street and join, if you're male?
That is possible. If you're 18 to 35, that's the purpose of the organization, to promote young
men.
Well,
you can't compare that with all those organizations you named.
Beg pardon?
Some of those organizations you named, one vote will keep you out.
That's true.
Right. Well, that's a little different.
In this case, there could be also local people could be excluded on a de facto basis likewise, and that's in the record.
Yes, but Mr. Hall, may I ask you just
yes.
a question? The debate as to whether it's a business or not,
yes.
in what sense are we asking that question? I think the Minnesota Supreme Court has told us, in a rather surprising
yes.
opinion, to be quite honest about it, says it is, quote, a business within the meaning of the Minnesota statute.
Yes.
So don't we have to accept that as that's where we start from?
No,
Do we have a power to reinterpret the Minnesota
yes,
statute?
Yes, I think when you have the power to analyze the facts in making the constitutional inquiry as to whether this organization's right to free association has been abridged.
In the meaning of the Minnesota state statute, this is a business, but that doesn't solve the case.
Well, if that were accepted, we would abridge constitutional rights by just
Why?
The mere imposition of labels.
Why? You would still have your constitutional argument.
Well,
just because it's a business doesn't solve your constitutional question. All it does is solve that it's a public accommodation within the meaning of the statute.
Well, our point is the same as Judge Arnold made, that the label business is simply a distortion of the facts. The organization.
I suppose it is. The Minnesota Legislature and the Minnesota Supreme Court can't determine the constitutional question here. We determine that issue, don't we?
Yes. I'm sorry, I didn't follow your question.
We determine the constitutional
That's
question,
correct.
Not the Minnesota Legislature
That's
or
correct.
The Minnesota Supreme Court.
That's correct.
If the Supreme Court of Minnesota says this is a business under Minnesota law, that's the last word on Minnesota law.
I'm not quarreling that the last word on whether or not they label us a public accommodation. That label, they are the last word. The point I'm making is that label does not preclude the constitutional analysis. That's the point we're making.
Mr. Hall, what about the selectivity question? May any young man between 18 and 35 be admitted?
The organization does have a wide admission policies of young men 18 to 35. Our position is that does not take away our right of
right,
free association.
But is it a fact that any man between those ages is admitted?
Yes, that is true, except for de facto exclusion on a local basis where people tend to admit people and recruit people as in St. Paul, where they're primarily business, but in New Orleans it may be another way, in Los Angeles it may be another, where people tend to recruit people they have something in common with. But it is true that it does not have an exquisite or exclusive method of recruitment. However, all the decisions of this court that have dealt with the Right of Freedom Association, to my knowledge, none of those cases have dealt with organizations that have highly selective or private club membership policies. And there's nothing in the cases that we have seen that indicate that an organization with this kind of a policy could not enjoy that freedom.
Part of your submission is that the First Amendment protects private organizations, whether they're communicative organizations or not, just fraternal organizations.
That is our position, although in this case there is broad communication of controversial public issues. In this case, none of which
you can identify as that would be different if there were women were.
I can identify if the organization itself, it were required to comply with the Minnesota injunction and admit women. It is inconceivable, and I think irrational, to assume that the organization won't change and that its viewpoint won't change. Anytime the membership...
Well, you haven't identified one yet.
Well,
you've been
yes.
asked about
abortion
several times. Well, it's you don't know what its viewpoint is.
Well, because they've never voted on it, but I can't predict the issue.
How do you know? All men don't agree on it either.
I can't predict what the viewpoint will be on any given issue that may come up next year or the year after or that.
But you think it just inevitably would be different?
I think that an organization in which you change the membership from one which is all men, dedicated to voting in the interests of men, and you change it to an organization which also includes women, I think it's only rational to assume that that organization is going to undergo a substantial change.
Well, but now it seems to me that there's something that has to depend on the nature of the organization. If you have an organization of all male stockbrokers that are solely concerned with the business of stockbrokering and what's happening to stockbrokering, and they're required to take in women stockbrokers, it seems to me that the great focus on stockbroking may be very little different between men and women. On the other hand, if you have an organization of male chauvinists that says we're tired of this affirmative action in favor of women, we want what we think is a square deal, it seems to me there you get a very different thing. But you haven't really shown that the JCs are in the latter category at all, that is that they espouse anything close to men's rights or the kinds of issues that men and women might feel differently about.
Well, the important point that I think perhaps I haven't made clear is that this organization's essential core purpose is to advance the interests of young men, just as there are women's organizations which central core purpose is to advance women. If you would require those women's organizations to admit men, you're going to change the organization. If you require this organization to admit women, I think it's inevitable that you're going to essentially to change it. I think we have a constitutional right to have an organization which just promotes the interest of young men. And I don't think we can expect that if it becomes an organization in which women are members, that they're going to long stand for leaving the organization with the sole purpose to advance the interests of men.
Aren't you just afraid that the women will, quote, take over, end quote?
Maybe perhaps Judge Doyle of the Tenth Circuit suggested that may be a possible fear, and if it is, I think it's the kind of fear that would be legitimately protected by any group. Women may keep out men for fear they'll take over. I think it's a legitimate right to do so.
Suffragette movement of a century ago had taken in men, they probably wouldn't have had the women's vote quite as soon as they did, would they?
That's right. And I think if women had been in this organization 5 years ago or even 6 years ago, they would not have been willing to spend the kind of money this organization is spending to uphold its constitutional right to be a men-only organization.
Mr. Hall, Fred, we're not giving you much chance to argue, but the Court of Appeals for the Eighth Circuit, in its holding paragraph on page 8-2, says this: we hold that the JC is a substantial part of whose activities involve the expression of social and political beliefs and the advocacy of legislation and constitutional change does have a right of association protected by the First Amendment. Number one, do you think the record supports that reading by the Court of Appeals?
Yes, it will. There, in Exhibit 19, as a matter of fact, there is a long list of positions and taken on critical, controversial issues by the local organizations. In addition to that, and I think it's Exhibit 3, there is also a long list of positions which the organization has taken over the years. They've taken the record itself reveals many positions since 1956. Actually, they were taking them even before that.
Mr. Hall, those exhibits, I suppose, are in the record, but not in any appendix that we have before us.
That's true. They're in the record. But both of those exhibits are in the record before the district judge.
Just mail issues. The interest of men. As you say, your primary interest is in promoting the interests of young men.
Yes.
And yet all of your public positions, none of your public positions can you identify as, quote, promoting the interests of young men, as distinguished from young women.
That's true, but the taking of positions on various issues is only one part of the way in which young men are developed. Young men are developed in this organization not just by taking positions on issues. That's only a part of it. Young men are developed primarily by running projects which in turn benefit the community, whether it's the Hartford Open or the Pattiburg Classic or whether it's...
And associating with other young men.
That's right. That's correct. And being officers and directors of those groups.
But aren't those projects designed to teach them to be good, effective executives?
Beg pardon?
And that's part of their training, to be effective executives, isn't it?
And they learn by doing.
And I suppose women wouldn't learn the same thing.
Women could learn exactly the same way, don't they?
If women did it, they could benefit from it, just as it...
Don't they participate in these programs?
Beg pardon?
Don't the associate members, the women, participate in these programs?
The associate women do participate in these programs. They do not have the right to vote or control policy of the organization.
Well, I know, but they participate in all these training programs. They learn how to run meetings.
They do not serve as officers, but the associate members have run projects, yes. Fact,
sure, they run projects and they're trained. They get the same exposure, except they aren't officers of the organization and don't vote.
And do not vote or hold office. That's correct.
Well, tell me, what other right do they have other than to pay the dues?
I'm sorry.
What other right do the women have other than to pay dues?
Well, first of all, this is a voluntary organization, Justice Marshall, and the women don't have to join on that basis, and that they're a very small group. The number of associate members is very small. At this time, it's about 9,000, and only a small portion of that are women associate members. Women have not joined in large droves as associate members. And I don't blame them for that, but that's their choice to make.
I was wondering if you wondered.
Beg pardon?
I was wondering if you did wonder why they didn't join.
But in Minnesota, when it was opened up, apparently women did join in substantial numbers.
Either that was primarily in violation of the bylaws. As I recall, Minnesota did not adopt any program, and that was just a flat violation of the bylaws, and that's how we got in this litigation.
Suffice it to say, in those organizations where the membership was opened up, the women joined in substantial numbers.
Beg pardon. I didn't follow you.
In those clubs that opted to open the membership up to full membership to women, women did join in substantial numbers.
That's correct. They did join in substantial numbers. The point we make here is that if no one, I think, would urge that now or any other active women organization that the state would have the right to dictate what that organization advocates. And yet, in this particular case, by dictating the composition of its membership...
Well, now, as I understand the state's attorney, he's not arguing that the state can dictate what the JCs advocate. I didn't hear him to say that at all, did he?
No, he doesn't.
No.
But he arrives at the same conclusion by dictating who the membership, and by dictating the membership, you effectively determine how that organization will, its collective voice.
Well, I don't think your opponent would have said, would say that his arguments all apply to a situation where there was something called the National Organization of Men, that it's anti-affirmative action, anti-ERA, and so forth. I think perhaps he would say the difference between that case and your case is you haven't shown that the JCs are the counterpart of NOW.
Yes, but it seems irrational to assume that this organization, to continue as an all-male organization, has to deliberately take positions on ERA or abortion in order to show how anti-woman it is. It doesn't seem to make sense that they can't have an all-male organization. There are all-women organizations, and I think they're accepted. Someone asked, will this affect the Girl Scouts or the Boy Scouts? I don't think there's any question. It has already, the trend of this kind of litigation has already affected the Boy Scouts in California.
Well,
that case is pure opinion.
You're basically asserting a First Amendment right. And the state is asserting a right to eliminate discrimination on the basis of race and sex in its public accommodations law. And I guess you will concede that the state does have power to regulate and prevent discrimination on the basis of race and sex.
In a public accommodation.
In a public accommodation. And it has defined the JCs as a public accommodation. So that requires us, I suppose, to apply some kind of a balancing test,
well,
as in O'Brien, and see whether the public interest and concern in elimination of discrimination is sufficient to uphold the regulation, right?
No, I don't concede that it's a balancing function at all. The label public accommodation, which they placed on the JCs, in which that state law determination is final, but that does not foreclose the necessary constitutional analysis to see if the JC's right to...
Well, but the constitutional analysis is what I'm trying to get at. We apply an O'Brien-type test, do we?
You would apply the test of Griswold versus Connecticut and other states, Sheldon versus Tucker and other cases, which have set forth the basic fundamental right of freedom of association to choose our own members. That's the test that we would apply.
Well, but you have businesses that said, we don't want to serve blacks. We have a restaurant and we're not going to serve blacks. And this court has said that the state's interest in eliminating discrimination is enough to put a stop to that.
Yes, but
all right. So you have this kind of balancing to look at, don't you?
Well, the two situations are not comparable. In the case of the traditional public accommodation, the restaurant, the theater, the motel, and so forth, those do not have private associational characteristics. Those, in fact, sharing a plate of food in a restaurant doesn't have any private associational characteristics. That's much different than the local JC organization, which many of them have anywhere a minimum of 22.
Don't you think those were the arguments that were made in those cases?
In the public accommodation cases, the right of freedom of association was not made, to my knowledge, because there were no private associational characteristics involved in a restaurant or a motel, as distinguished from this case, where a local JC organization of 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 young men associate together on a week-to-week basis.
What if they associate together to organize a training school for young executives?
Beg pardon?
What about a training school for young executives, which had different projects and seminars and so on?
Well, if it's a training school for young executives, you're in the context now of a commercial enterprise. Yes, young male executive, you're in the context of a commercial enterprise, I think that would be a public accommodation. They'd have to admit women. Back to the earlier question, the JCs is simply not a business. It's a nonprofit organization, and It does not have the characteristics of a business.
You made reference to the National Organization for Women and some of these women's organizations. I noticed in their brief that they filed here that there are 200,000 women and men in that organization. Apparently, they do take in men.
Yes. As to those organizations, the problem of admitting anyone to interfere with their fundamental underlying purpose has not been a problem. Some of the organizations who have filed as amicus here, however, do limit their membership to women, and legitimately so, because those organizations feel that they're promoting the interests of women, and if they want to do that, they should limit their organization to women. There are large organizations in this country which do limit their membership strictly to women for the sole purpose of advancing the interest of women.
Mr. Hall, I noticed that from Exhibit 3 that the JCs in 1981 urged a constitutional amendment requiring Congress to balance the budget every year. And in 1983, they urged a constitutional amendment to support voluntary prayer in American schools. Now, are those fairly typical of the types of things that the JCs do?
Yes, that's that's typical in terms of the national positions they would take. The local positions by local organizations would be much more tied to local bond issues, the local problems of local and state interest. One further question I'd like to address, and that is the question of vagueness. Presumably, in this case, if the JCs had have a desire to comply with this statute in any way, the question is how could the bylaws be amended? They meet each and every June. And could amend the bylaws in any way that the membership chose to do so. We submit that not only is it impossible for an ordinary individual to know how to amend the bylaws in this case to comply with Minnesota's law so as to be like the Kiwanis, but I submit it would even be literally impossible for the average ordinary intelligent lawyer to amend the JC bylaws to comply in order to be more a private organization like the Kiwanis, as distinguished from a public organization like the JCs. Thank you.
Do you have anything further? You have 1 minute remaining.
Unless the court has some questions, Mr. Chief Justice, I have no further remarks.
Not. Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.
The court is now adjourned until Monday next at 10 o'clock.